Season 3, episode 13, A Tush Full of Dollars. It opens up with Russell and Simone after obviously spending the night together, and Russell is talking on the phone with her mom's lawyer, because if you remember from last episode, her mom killed her dad, and they're not 100% sure if it was in self-defense or not, so it might have to go to trial. Basically, it's Russell complaining about the strategy that they're using, because she's dealing with her mom who's freaking out that she'll have to go to trial, and
Russell's worried that the lawyer's only doing it because she, like, gets a boner out of what the case is.
Because this, like, yeah, that lawyer.
This episode, sorry to interrupt, this episode really tries to make lawyers look like pieces of shit the whole time. It's really, really funny.
It's a really anti-lawyer episode. There's a lot of anti-lawyer sentiment around. They get a DOA. Well, Simone gets one on the phone, so he meets Sipowicz there, and it is the son of a mobster.
Yes.
It's a son of Carmine. Let me see. Carmine Del Marco. He was shot dead at his breakfast table. And nobody's talking.
You know, that's a name you don't hear anymore.
Carmine?
Carmine, yeah. Like, Batman Begins had Carmine Falcone. Like, in other mob movies I've heard of, you heard of people like the name Carmine. I just feel like that's like an old Italian name that's kind of died out. And they don't really call anybody Carmine anymore.
It does seem, I mean, I don't know anything about Italian culture. It does seem like an old school name, and they're trying to, maybe they're trying to. It also, it only seems to be associated with mobsters.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe they're just trying to, like, not use it anymore, because anytime you hear it, you're like, oh, shit. But his wife is not saying anything. Nobody is saying anything to him. All they know is that there wasn't any forced entry. It just looks like he was shot up close at the table, and no one's saying anything. And this, of course, is NYPD Blue Balls, where the Asher Brothers go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Some good news and some bad news before the episode starts. The good news, NYPD Blue is on Hulu. As of recording time, it is on Hulu. You can watch every single episode on Hulu. And Hulu, you're welcome for the free advertisement you're going to get from our show every 2 weeks.
like they care.
They're going to get the Asher Brothers bump, and then they're going to be like, who are these guys? Except it won't.
Then we're going to get our own Hulu show. It's going to be called Talkin' Blue.
Where we have to curse the whole time?
And then Chris Hardwick's going to sue us because we took him. We're taking his deal.
We're taking his deal.
That kind of shit.
And the bad news is Stephen Bochco, the creator of NYPD Blue, one of the creators, died yesterday as of recording time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw that.
He died on Easter. And we got a bunch of messages and on Twitter, and it's sad. Also, Sharon Lawrence wrote a really nice thing about him on Twitter. So rest in peace, Stephen. Thank you for the NYPD Blue. And let's get into it. So
Sharon Lawrence has Twitter?
Sharon Lawrence does have Twitter. And I'm not 100% sure. It looks like Dennis Franz has one, but it's not verified. And I don't know if it's really him, because all it is him fucking with people asking him when the DVDs of NYPD Blue are coming out. And it seems like it stopped in 2013. So I don't think it's actually him, but who knows.
That's funny.
So they come back to the house after the opening credits, and they run it down to Fancy that son of a mobster got shot, nobody's talking. The quote from Sipowicz is, family gave tremendous cooperation, nobody saw Dick. Fancy asks Simone, because they have another DOA, if Russell is ready to catch. And Simone gives the okay, which I find kind of strange. It's kind of strange for a coworker to ask another, or a, how do I put this? Someone's superior to ask another coworker, hey, is she ready to go? Because I know you guys are like getting down and dirty after work. Do you think she's ready to go do her job again?
Yeah.
felt that was kind of weird.
Which is funny because, like, if Fancy knows that they're dating, Fancy, as a boss, needs to take care of that situation and problem. And he kind of just turns his other... kind of just, like, he knows they're, like, together, but he doesn't care, you know? Or he's not going to say anything about it. But really, he should. Really, he should do something about it. But, anyways.
And we'll talk more, as this episode goes on, about the possible, you know, corruption based on that one DA.
Yeah.
But we do get a witness to come in for their case for the mobster son. And she basically says to them, their mother came into my apartment. She said the younger one shot the older one and the younger one's a piece of shit. Max.
Yeah,
Max.
Yeah, yeah. No, the mom didn't say that, did she?
No. The mom didn't say it. The neighbor said it.
Oh, yeah. The neighbor came in to help because the dad comes in. Like, looks at the crime scene and goes, oh, I know what happened here. And then Sipwood says, do you want to enlighten us? And he says, do what you need to do and get out.
Nobody here has anything to say to you.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, I mean, you could just let me know what's going on and I could do my job. The neighbor lady comes in and tells them, yeah, the younger one's a piece of shit. He always looks nice, but he's an asshole. He has nothing behind his eyes. And the wrong son died this morning.
They go on a mission to find him.
And they get a tip that he's a guy that likes to rip off gay bars.
Yeah.
He likes to shake down gay bars. So they go to some gay bars and they find out from gay patrons that he's a bit of a dick who just roughs up people and takes their money. But the bar owner is like, I don't think he's going to be coming back. And they get the impression that Carmine, his father, has told everybody, if you keep quiet about my son, he'll be out of town.
Yeah, and he won't bother you.
So right now it's kind of a race between the detectives and this mob family to try and get at this kid before he gets out of town. Adrian and Martinez get a DOA.
Well, is it Martinez or Medavoy?
Medavoy and Russell are taking care of the other...
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of want to leave that on its own and then bring up the ADA after. But, Martinez and Lesniak get two DOAs in a bridal shop, and it turns out it's this Jimmy kid, the younger son, because the guy who owns the bridal shop is like, yeah, it's Jimmy. He came in a couple times for suits.
Yeah.
Like, it's a complete eyewitness, I've met the guy before, I know it's him. And it turns out this Jimmy guy seemed like he was going to rob them and then just killed them and didn't kill the bridal shop guy because his gun jammed.
The bridal shop guy seems really, scared.
Yeah, he did a really good job. That actor, I looked him up to see if he was in anything. It seems like he was in Different Strokes. And is it Different Strokes? Is that the one with Webster?
I have no idea.
All right, well, he was on one of those old shows that I can't remember. The guy who plays Carmine, yeah. Different Strokes?
Webster was from Different Strokes.
The guy who played Carmine Del Marco is a guy named Richard Romanos, and he was in Heavy Metal, Mean Streets.
Webster was its own TV show. Different Strokes was its own TV show, and Webster was its own TV show.
But wasn't that guy, Gary Coleman was in both?
No, Gary Coleman was in Different Strokes. Webster was a different person.
All right.
Webster had... Webster was basically, like, kind of a ripoff of Different Strokes, but for a different TV station, I think.
I mean, I feel like I'm getting out of this one because I'm too young to know, but I just saw that he was on one of those old shows. I couldn't find him, but he did a really good job because he was just, like, a terrified guy that was like, I don't understand why he did this. Like, I know who he is. He came into my store, robbed these people, even though I know he doesn't need the money, and then shot them point blank for no reason. They keep getting reports about him driving with this car, this tricked out caddy with Dr. Funky.
Yeah.
As the license plate. And they finally get that guy into the room, and there's a great exchange between him and Sipowicz because the guy says, oh, I had a cold. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, you being an MD, I'm sure you just prescribed yourself something. And then he said, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, your license plate says you're an MD. And he says, no, that's a joke, Dr. Funky. And he's like, oh, so you're not a doctor.
that was a funny interaction.
Also, that I think that guy also did a pretty good job too, because he was just a dude that was told, "Hey, drive this kid out of town."
Yeah.
And then the kid jumped out of the car, shot a bunch of people, then got back in his car. And he got a jackpot, as they say in NYPD Blue. He got a jackpot, and he didn't want to have anything to do with it. So they get the impression Carmine tried to just get him out of there, but the kid just started shooting people. In between all this, Fancy gets a report from another
shooting.
Another DOA. I don't know if he's shot, but a dude was killed and $12 was shoved up his ass. Hence the name, yeah. Tishful of Dollars. It appears that this gentleman had pictures of Jimmy DelMarco participating in some homosexual activities. And he had written some blackmail letters. And it appears Jimmy DelMarco killed him, shoved some money up his ass, and put him in a trash can.
Yep. That's kind of his way of getting back at him.
The way they catch this guy is they get a call from someone that says he'll be at this gaming center, or like, I guess it's just a place to play games. I've never heard of it. Where they're just playing gym.
I think it's like a back room. It's basically a place where it's like illegal gambling's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mobs will have like gambling areas set up where like they can do gambling, but they don't have to pay taxes, and like they can like launder a bunch of money and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what that's supposed to represent. That's why it's crazy that whoever called said, "Yeah, you can just walk right in; no one will bother you." Because they're basically saying, like, we'll let you into our illegal activity to pick this kid up, and we won't try to defend it like we normally do.
And
Because I think Simonis even says, or Sipwitz, whoever's on the phone, he's like, okay, well, when we go in there, are you guys going to try to, like, light us up? Or, like, what artillery are we going to have to bring?
He said, how many tanks are we going to need to get through the door?
Yeah.
I think is what he said.
Yeah, and then and then you hear him say, like, none, basically. And so that's kind of, like, an odd thing.
And it's clear to them that, okay, they're now setting up this kid to get caught by us. And when they go down there, because even Fancy goes, well, take a bunch of backup anyway, because he's been shooting people all day.
Yeah.
So they take a whole bunch of, like, people in SWAT teams and with bulletproof vests. They walk in the back door. The guy at the door is like, he's that dude over there. I think he even calls him a scumbag. He's like, it's that scumbag over there. They come up behind him. They throw him down on the table. And the guy he's playing gin rummy with, basically, the guy says, well, maybe one day your luck will change, Jimmy. And then his head gets slammed down. And the kids keep saying, call my pop. And he's like, yeah, we'll get right on that, Jimmy. And he just gets pulled out of the room and taken to the house.
Yeah, and I think it's when they first go into the building, like, there's a guy standing outside, I should have written it down, but I think Sipwitz or Simone says, hey, take a walk, and the guy just literally walks away.
Yeah, that does happen.
From the front door, which mm-hmm. means, which is basically they're saying, go ahead and get it.
It's a really cool story, especially how it ends, because Jimmy is now at the house. He's in the little cage inside the interrogation room.
Yeah.
And Sipwitz starts ruffling his feathers, basically saying, hey, man, I get it. You were a little upset. You were having people talk about your gay activities. Maybe your brother mentioned something. Maybe he asked something from the Citrus family. Maybe he asked for a fruit and you go off. And the kid starts freaking out, and he's like, where's the quote? Jimmy wants to get friendly, because he's like screaming, up your ass! And he's like pointing at him through the gate, and Sipwitz is just sitting there. Carmine shows up to the station house, and he asks, can I see him? He walks in, they take him out of the cage, and Carmine and Jimmy have a conversation that's really, really intense.
This scene's great. I really like this part, yeah.
Because his dad is like, do you think you're the only gay person in the world? Your mom can't stop crying. And then Jimmy's like, no, I'll get out of this, Dad. And he's like, she's crying for Vincent.
Yeah.
Like, she cares about the other son that you killed for no reason. And then essentially looks at him and says, I take responsibility for my actions. It's time for you to take responsibility for yours.
Well, yeah, because you find out that the dad paid that Dr. Funky guy to drive him out of town. And then they did that stick up. And so that's when he says that, because he's kind of like, you know, I tried to help you, and I put this man in harm's way, and you basically, like, put him, you basically almost are making him, like, go to jail as an accessory to crime.
And he even told, I think he says to him, he's like, I'm telling your friend to start telling the truth, and yeah. make a statement.
I'm getting word to your friend to start telling the truth.
And then he's like, look, I think Phil Lombardi will represent you. And then he just, like, leaves.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy talks hot shit, saying he's going to get me a walk. He can forget about any statement.
Joe Lombardi, he's the best.
He's the best.
He's the best.
Also, this is going to come out of left field a little bit. Did you think that that guy, the guy who played Jimmy, I'm going to get his name really quick, but did you think he looked like Goro from Mortal Kombat? The movie?
Goro?
I don't know if you've seen...
The guy with four arms?
Yes, didn't his face look like the Goro's face? I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I've seen the Mortal Kombat movie, Kirk.
I've seen
and
it.
And I would have to say no.
Okay.
Because that's lunacy.
I think he looks exactly like the dude from Mortal Kombat, and I thought it was him. His name's Billy Gallo, and it's not him, but he's been in a bunch of other shit.
Yeah, I hope he didn't play Goro.
It seemed like Goro's face to me, but that's just me. Anyway, the other case that we have that Russell and Medavoy get is a DOA in a bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
When they get there, there's a assistant lawyer downstairs at the steps, and they walk past him. The uniform officer mentions that he has a lawyer downstairs working for the lawyer upstairs, which I think is named Barry Ulin.
Yeah.
He says the name Barry Ulin, and and Russell goes, oh, Barry Ulin, great. And the guy's like, who's Barry Ulin? And Medavoy says, oh, don't worry about it. Ignorance of lawyers is a good quality to have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't really like this...
case?
Yeah.
What?
I just thought, like...
Why
I don't know, it wasn't my favorite.
Because the way it works out, I kind of dug it. I dug it and hated it for separate reasons. One, they go upstairs, and it's pretty clear that this guy probably killed his wife. There's a woman shot in her bed. He has a lawyer that won't allow them to go into any other room, per the law, unless they get a warrant. He's not allowing him to speak. The lawyer isn't allowing the guy to speak. And Russell is going really hard on the idea that this guy definitely shot his wife.
Oh, well, I mean, the dude definitely shot his wife. Yeah, I mean...
There's really no question. But even Russell doesn't make any bones about, like, saying straight out, I'm pretty sure this guy killed his wife.
Well, I also think it's not the best first case for Russell to start on.
Mm-hmm.
Because her mom, one of her parents just shot... another one of her parents. So I don't think the first movie, and it was her mom, so seeing, like, a dead mother in bed, I don't think that's the first thing that she should see, you know?
Yeah, it was a bad thing for her to come back. As they're leaving the scene, the victim's son and the potential killer's stepson is walking up the steps, and the assistant lawyer tries to nab him, but the detectives get him instead. And the stepson says, yeah, I have messages from my stepfather, who was drunk as hell, saying that he shot my mom, once in self-defense, once because a prowler came in and did it, and then once in, like, it was basically changed his story three times.
Yeah.
Like, they had a fight and it was an accident, then it was a prowler and an accident, then the prowler did it, and he's like... He's pissed because he's like, my mom is dead and it's this guy's fault and he's lying about it. And the lawyer was hoping to talk to him first, but he talks to the detectives first.
Yeah.
Quick thinking, Russell tries to arrest the guy because, you know, they don't have to charge him, but they can take him to the house. to try and get everybody separated, but unfortunately, the stepson goes in the car with the lawyer.
Yeah.
Who changes his mind before he gets to the station house. Another unfortunate thing, the writing DA on this case happens to be the same DA who may or may not believe that corruption took place to keep Russell's mom out of prison.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think he believes that at all. I don't think he believes there's any corruption at all. I think he was,
he was dicked around in this episode a bunch.
Yeah, so, yeah, well, you find out later, because he says, like, oh, I didn't know what they wanted to do. He goes, I didn't know the plan, but I was told to do this, this, and this, but I didn't know what they were doing. Basically, he's saying, like, the actor doesn't know what everyone else is doing, or something. I don't remember exactly what he says. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine.
The actors don't know the point of the play.
Yeah, and I get that. And he may not. And to be fair, he comes in just trying to do his job. It's Russell and everyone in the police department that's weird as fuck about it.
Yeah.
He comes in just trying to do the case part, and they're all acting shady towards him like he's not doing his job. And it's like, well, I mean, the dude's just doing what he's paid to do. I mean...
Yeah, it's basically the way the case goes is the guy then, the stepson, who is played by Michael Bowman. He's the one that played David Tierney, I believe that was the last name. Michael Bowen, or did I say Bowman or Bowen? Michael Bowen was in Kill Bill. I believe he was Buck, who likes to fuck.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he was also Uncle Jack in Breaking Bad, the Nazi. That, became the main villain towards the end. Yeah, that dude's been in some stuff. And he was pretty good in this. Essentially, the whole case becomes this moral back and forth between Russell and David. Detective Russell and this David Tierney guy. Because David Tierney then goes, look, I don't know what I said, I was just lying. And then Russell's like, but you said you have those tapes, so where are those tapes? And he's like, oh, I deleted them. So then Russell's like, well, can I just get your statement that this happened? Then maybe we can try and rustle up some evidence or whatever. And then she goes really hard on him to try and get him to turn, and he just kind of lets it go because he was told by the lawyer that they still have no case. Russell implies that he would use it as leverage, which is kind of insulting to him.
Yeah.
It goes back and forth. And what kind of sucks is, I guess Russell is the lead on this case, but Medavoy just kind of hangs back and provides no help to this situation.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Because it's supposed to be like a partner situation, and every time Russell's talking and Medavoy is just in the background not helping at all.
I think this was supposed to be like Russell's way of dealing with shit.
Yeah, because she had to... And while this is going on and she's going back and forth with Yulin and Tiernan? The father who shot the wife, stepfather who shot his wife. She's also taking meetings with her mom's lawyer about her mom's case.
Yeah.
So it's
because she doesn't want her mom to go to trial or whatever.
So she's going back and forth between these two different lawyers, one who's trying to help her, and one that's trying to keep their client out of prison. And at one point, this is where I think the title of the episode, but you couldn't get away with this on television. I think the title of the episode should have been A Whore Lawyer, because she has that moment where she gets pissed off because through some clever lawyering, they don't have to produce the weapon.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, you have a registered 22. Where is that? And she's like, oh, it's been... stolen. He's like, oh, and you never reported it? He's like, no, I haven't reported it. He's like, oh, that's extremely convenient. So then she makes a comment, and then the lawyer says, what do you want to be when you grow up, Detective Russell? And she goes, not like you, a whore lawyer. And then her lawyer walks up.
Yeah.
And then says, is somebody here representing prostitutes? And it was a solid...
That was a pretty good line.
I wish it could, that could be the title of the episode, A Whore Lawyer, because everybody's hating on lawyers in this episode.
Yeah.
She hates on her own lawyer because she doesn't really agree with her plan. But anyway, the case with the stepson and the stepfather basically just ends going nowhere, and then the guy tries to still get a date with Russell, even though she clearly hates him, which is weird.
Yeah, I found that very odd, that, like, he kept asking her out.
Because he said, oh, I wish we met under different circumstances, and she's like, yeah, whatever. And then he comes back to the house, and he's like, look, I tried to see if the phone company could get those messages back, and they can't. And she's like, that's great, you still didn't stand up, so I don't care.
Yeah.
And then she's like, and then he says, like, it's really bold to then say, oh, I guess that drinks out of the question. And she's like, oh, look, that education didn't go to waste. She obviously hates you, dude. Like, just let it go. Let the dream die. The case with her mother turns out, the lawyer basically uncovers that it was just a PR move to not go easier on this woman because she's the mother of a police officer. And so they're going to just give her probation and whatnot.
Yeah.
That's when the ADA, he makes a comment when he gets the warrant for the apartment where he's like, oh, excuse me, I got to get in my Patsy outfit for when I get screwed for your mom. And walks away. And then at the end of the episode, he's like, oh, look at my favorite couple. And then Simone automatically is pissed. And he said, can't you afford a beaten man some irony? And he's like, what's your problem? The problem is you just talk like a sissy. And he's like, here's the deal, man. They were using me for this PR move. I don't think they were ever going to take your mom to trial. And then she's like, yeah, unless they were. And then you would have shown up with your Louisville Slugger. And then he says what you and I have been saying. He's like, look, I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing my job. This is what they asked me to do and pay me to do. I'm an advocate for my clients just like the other lawyers you deal with are an advocate for theirs. And then he does what I would have done in that situation, that said, and it's extremely convenient that the detective that was put on this case happens to be dating the daughter of the accused. And then Simone grabs him by the neck and threatens him physically. And the guy resorts to the only thing he knows how, which is to press charges for assault.
Mm-hmm.
And then he drops him, and then they walk away. Everybody walks away from the situation. And even after that happened, I was like, I think they're still in the wrong.
Oh, 100%. It's not like what the lawyer said was wrong.
Because
Simone then gets all pissed off, and he's like, that's twice now that you said I tried to blow this case. And it's like, well, no offense, dude, but a doctor wouldn't be allowed to operate on his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? A lawyer could represent his wife or husband because they could say, like, this is my lawyer, this isn't my husband or wife, but it's still a conflict of interest. Like, they're 100% in the wrong. That's what's so funny about why, like, he gets so mad. It's like, well, the only reason you're getting mad is because you know he's right. Like, you know that it's not right. You know that it's not the way to do it.
And,
but
Ed, like, the way he said it, that you mentioned, Simone is upset because the guy's implying that he would intentionally ground the case.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's like, dude, no offense, Simone, you are my favorite, obviously, but step out of the situation for a second and see how bad it looks. Like, whether or not you tried your hardest, whether or not you got to the bottom of what actually happened, it still looks incredibly bad that you're the one doing it. If Medavoy got the case because someone murdered his wife,
yeah,
they would immediately take him off of it because it's his own wife.
Yep.
It only makes sense. Him freaking out about it was just, too much.
Well, and then it's funny because, like, I mean, later on, this isn't a spoiler, there's an episode where, like, there's an episode later on where they get called to a dead body. And when they get to the dead body, they see that it's in a trunk, and then they realize that the trunk has been dragged from one spot to another spot, which changes the
jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like, that's corruption, and that's police officers not doing what they're supposed to do correctly. Mm-hmm. So this lawyer saying that really isn't, it really isn't an unnecessary or like out of the element type of thing, you know? I don't know.
It's, Yeah, that was really... That was a fucked up episode. I forgot about that one. Because don't they have a conversation with those cops? I think, weren't the cops on the scene?
And the cops were on the scene. So that's why it's kind of, like, it's not totally out of the...
question.
...realm for this guy to be like, hey, there's kind of some...
There's some hanky-panky. Shit. Yeah. There's some nonsense going on here. The episode ends with a little bit of that NYPD blue ass and side boob. Courtesy yes. of Russell and Simone.
Yep.
And you can tell it's coming because the music takes a very interesting tonal change as it sweeps through the New York night skyline, and then it just ass. And it's just a conversation of Russell saying, basically, I don't know if I came back too soon or not.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Them gently cuddling.
Then they start having a fucking conversation, like, deep conversation and shit, and they fuck each other, I think.
Quick things that I forgot to mention as I'm looking at my notes. The guy that played Barry Ulin, his name is James? His name's James Sloyan, Sloyan. He was in The Sting and a couple of Star Treks. Just wanted to mention that because his face looked familiar, and that's why he was in The Sting. Some good Sipowicz lines I forgot to mention. When he's talking to Dr. Funky, he says, having that kind of car is bad for your line of work, especially when your face looks like a dog's ass. He then says, you're right on your way to to running a fleet of limos when they find out he was the driver. And then he says something about taking that vehicle off of an Indian guy's hands who lost everything. And then Sipowicz kind of leans back and goes, wow, unlucky vehicle. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about this episode while I look through?
Not really. This episode's pretty straightforward. There's really not much going on. I enjoyed it. It's a good episode. I like what's it called? The mob angle more than...
The family one?
Than any other one, but it was good.
I forgot to mention the woman that plays the lawyer for Russell's mom is Julie Ariola? Uh-huh. Whatever. Julia was a repeat NYPD Blue alum. She was the lady in an earlier episode that kept saying her husband would beat on her, but then never pressed charges.
Yes, and she ended up dead.
And she ended up dying. That's the same woman. Repeat NYPD Blue alumni. Anyway, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast. You can talk to me, specifically Kirk, about the show. Kyle doesn't deal with our social media. Have a good one, everybody. 1 again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. Now you can watch NYPD Blue on Hulu every single episode of the best show ever. Check it out. I think Hulu has a free week-long trial, and then you can get it for NYPD Blue and South Park and Community and Rick and Morty and a whole bunch of good stuff. I think you should get it just for NYPD Blue, but I'm sure you'll find something else there. Free plug for Hulu. Also, check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, if you just need more NYPD Blue goodness. You can also check out True Blue, written by David Milch and Detective Bill Clark. Check out more of the show here, AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, wherever you find a podcast, and MixedBagHats.com. Have a good one. Peace.